Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorney navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions in fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell. And today we have a special guest with us, Mr. Adam Cottle from the Army Office of General Counsel. Thank you so much for coming back again.
You're very welcome. Always happy to come support my friends at ADK.
So today we're going to do a revolutionary FAR overhaul update. So we're going to go over, I think, some of the issues we're seeing in certain FAR parts. We're entering phase two now of the two parts phases. So we're going to talk a little bit, I think, about some dates that we're seeing and some things that are going to be coming in the future. So let's get to it.
Yeah, a lot to talk about here. Oh, yeah. And just as a caveat, because things are moving so quickly, by the time this podcast comes out, some of this may already be OBE, and we're going to move as quickly as we can. But that's the thing about times are changing quickly, and we move as fast as we can to keep up with it.
Absolutely. Especially these dates keep evolving and changing. So especially notice and comment. So last guidance we had, it was going to start in April. We're obviously a few weeks into April. I haven't seen anything come out yet, but I think it's about to start soon.
Soon, sometime soon. And if we get a date wrong, by the way, don't come after Major Sewell with pitchforks. Not her fault. Let's say the pitchforks and torches for me. But yeah, dates in terms of, we should be moving into FAR Part 2 notice and comment any day now. If by the time this comes out, if things haven't dropped, everyone should be checking the Federal Register on a daily basis. Things are coming out very quickly, and when they do, they're only going to be open for 30 days for comment. Everyone, practitioners across the spectrum, in the government, out of the government, everyone is encouraged to make a comment if they see something that needs to be revised. There is a sincere effort here to make these the best they can be made. And so if someone has something that add value, please do so.
And so they're doing it in six batches, I think is what I've
Six rules.
Six rules. So they'll have six different drops. And so you got 30 days after each one of those for that specific section, I guess, of rules.
Yeah, several parts. So you can anticipate with basically 51 parts of the FAR, well, some are reserved. We should be looking at somewhere around 6 to 8 parts per rule is what we'll wind up having. And that's a lot of material to cover.
Yes.
Anything that's interest of you, review it. I would imagine that we would have thousands, if not tens of thousands of comments, because I know industry has been waiting for quite a while. And one of the things we are expecting to see are some pretty substantial differences and changes from phase one to phase two, because phase two is going to add new concepts. We might have executive orders that might be changing along the way. I know there are a number of legislative proposals that are out there where, for example, the GSA has submitted, I believe, 18 different legislative proposals to Congress to change the FAR. The Department of War has submitted a number of things that would change the DFAR. So this is not going to be quick. It's going to be ongoing. I think that's better putting it. This is something that's going to keep going for quite a while. But the important date is the instruction has been issued. We will be done with all of the formal FAR notice and comment final rules issued no later than 14 November 2026. So we're going to be moving very, very quickly once the rules close for comment.
That is actually really quick. But DFARs, we're on a different schedule with DFARs because, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're kind of waiting until all this is over to start the DFARs portion of this?
Correct. So we have tried to make some changes to the DFARs through the class deviation because, as you're tracking, every year in the NDAA, Congress tells us change the DFARs, change your acquisition rules. Ever since, I believe it's like the 2011 NDAA was the first one that really kicked that off. And so for roughly the past 15 years, and this past year's NDA was no exception. So we're trying to incorporate those changes and revisions into the DFARs we can. But really, because the DFARs nest within the FAR and must be consistent with it, we are going to wait until after the FAR final rules have been published before they issue draft rules for the DFARs. Because even, for example, a draft rule for the FAR could be issued in May. But that might change substantially between now and November based on public comments, because again, there is a sincere effort to ask the public, please comment. The drafters of these rules are not claiming to be perfect. They understand that they are phrasing things in ways that can be refined, think concepts can be improved upon. And so things can be expected to change. The Department of War has made the decision to wait until after the final rules are issued so that we can make certain that we are fully aligned with them whenever we go to publish the draft rules, with the expected date to be, for the final rules for the DFARS to be issued somewhere around November 2027. So roughly a little about more than a year and a half from now.
So you're saying that I'm gainfully employed for the next year and a half at least.
I think everybody who's in the government practice world is going to be gainfully employed for quite a while, because after those are published, then all of us attorneys then have to go forth and explain them and train people and talk to them and do more podcasts. And I'm sure you'll ask me to come back at some point and say, yeah, hey, Adam, come explain all these new rules to us, because things are going to change. That's the only constant, you know, as David Bowie says, embrace the strange from changes. And so that's where we're going with that, with all this, is expect change, expect continual innovation, because even after this is done, we are going to be seeing further changes, because the FAR was promulgated in 1984, I think. Yeah. It's been a long time. And even the FAR, if you do a little bit of history for you, significant portions of the FAR were actually lifted more or less wholesale from not just the Defense Acquisition Regulations, which was a precursor to the DFARS, but the ASPRs, the Armed Services Procurement Regulations. Significant portions of the cost accounting standards and the FAR today were lifted from that. That originated in the 1950s. So a lot of our concepts and a lot of our ideas go back to the 50s in some cases, to the American Civil War in 1865 is where some of these things originate. It was due for an overhaul.
Oh, absolutely. Just some of the things that they've been taking out are obsolete. They don't exist anymore. Just trying to catch up technology with the new DFARS 240, with, you know, incorporating some of that information, like moving it to its own section, because technology has changed. So the rules around that have obviously changed. Oh, yeah. It was definitely due for a good scrubbing.
Yes. And we expect more to come in the future. I can say just, you know, good news is the Army isn't planning on adding anything more to the AFARs. I will kind of a quick update on that. We are almost done with the AFARs revision for our Army practitioners. We have only AFARs 5137 and 5139 left to finish revising, and hopefully we'll get those both done fairly soon. We have eliminated about 70% of the AFARs text, and we've moved a significant portion of the AFARs into the new AFARs PGI. And so Army practitioners should go to look at that and see what changes have been made. But again, fortunately, the Army doesn't appear having plans to add to it and change it too much in these next phases. We're just making sure that our numbering system aligns to the DFARS and to the FAR, and we will keep marching along, executing on the mission we've been given.
As an Air Force member who've had Air Force PGIs for a little while now, for anyone else who's a little concerned about having a PGI versus everything in the AFARS, I have found no issues with dealing with a PGI. The information's still there, easily readable to find out what you need.
And really what we've tried to do, as someone who's been extensively involved in the AFARS rewrite and some of the DOW rewrites, is try to remove the restrictions, delegate authority where we can, and empower contracting professionals to exercise the discretion that they've been given to be able to go forth and execute on that mission quickly and as cost effectively and the lowest risk that is desirable for the government. And so that's what we're trying to do, is empower our contracting professionals.
All right, we've talked about the phases. We're moving into phase two. What are some of the major changes, though, that you want to point out that have happened with the RFO?
Sure. So the first major change is simply a cultural shift. Contracting officers have always had the discretion in acquisitions. If it's not prohibited, it's permitted. This is, of course, the inverse of fiscal law, which is that if it's not expressly permitted, it is prohibited. And acquisitions, if there's not something you point to and say, this prohibits you, then generally, contracting officers have some amount of discretion to come up with new creative ways of doing things. Of course, as long as they don't violate, there's a whole case Federal Circuit recently ruled on about contracting officers who are a little too creative. But in terms of that, the major change, that is one of the big emphasis of trying to empower contracting officers and to emphasize that discretion. Say, hey, you can go forth and you can do these things. In phase one, there just weren't that many changes overall. Most of it was revisions for clarity. One big change that affected a lot of parts was they changed from what was a topical or subject matter division into a four-part structure of solicitation, evaluation, award, and post-award. So that way it's changed to this temporal alignment. So you can say, okay, where does this matter fall under? Is it a post-award matter? Is it a solicitation matter? Is it a matter involving contract award or evaluations? And that's probably the biggest widespread revision we've seen, is simply changing, taking the existing parts and moving their pieces around to fit that new structure.
And after going through several of those structures, and I'm thinking of just like FAR Part 5 alone, it really does make sense when you're trying to follow almost chronologically now. It's sort of, okay, I'm in the solicitation phase. Okay, I know I'm looking at that little section then. I'm not trying to dig through the, okay, what I need is in this topic and then also this topic down here. There's not as much jumping around. So I have appreciated that restructuring. Yes, it's a little annoying because some of my numbers have now changed, but the text hasn't changed. But I do think it does help, especially for new attorneys and new KOs, to really figure out where's the guidance, what do they need to find. FAR Part 12 is another one that I think did a really good job of following through how to do quotes, requests for quotes, to really made it more understandable, digestible, I think is a better word there.
Now, I'd like to think they just went ahead and copied the format we have in the CAC desk book, because that's the format you use in that desk book. Is you talk about, here are pre-award matters, here are evaluation matters, here are award matters, here are post-award. So that's what I think is, I think they took the best practices from here at the schoolhouse and they applied that to the entire government.
Exactly. They said, how do we teach it? And let us just apply it to the FAR now.
Hey, it's been an effective course for decades. You know, let's just borrow it for the rest of the government.
It was that course that made me want to stay here and teach.
Awesome. So there have been some other changes too. You've touched on some of them. For example, the federal supply schedule in FAR Part 8 has now moved to the GSA manual. So that was a bit of a change. FAR Part 13 was split. It is now only applicable to simplified acquisitions for non-commercial parts.
It's very short now. It is very short.
A lot of it got moved to FAR Part 12 because now Part 12 is all commercial acquisitions. Just one note for our DOW practitioners, the FY26 NDA removed a very important word from our commercial solutions openings in DFARS 212.70, where we have our CSOs. The FY26 NDA removed the word innovative. And so now, whenever that change is implemented into the DFARS, CSOs will only be applicable for commercial solutions. They will no longer be applicable, as far as, at least as I read the statute, for non-commercial solutions that were innovative that we were able to shoehorn into the CSO world. That was a statutory change we're going to implement soon. The things we're talking about, innovative, we're going to have to find a different way of addressing those, that maybe perhaps OTAs, 10 USC 4022, but that was a kind of an interesting change as well. There were a number of FAR parts that were merged. Part 38 was reserved in its entirety. Part 51 was merged into Part 8. There are going to be more mergers in Phase 2 of the RFO. That will be coming out in the next few weeks. And one thing also, big change for DOW practitioners, is there is a new DFARS Part 240. There was a FAR Part 40. There was never a DFARS 240. That is a new FAR part, a DFARS part that we can talk about.
Yes, because they've taken a lot out of FAR Part 4 and they're moving it into 40. So it kind of makes sense now that DFARS is now following suit, following that same, putting CMMC in there, putting some of the other security concerns as well in that new DFARS 240.
Yeah, it's really helpful for a lot of organization to try to, put things where they belong. One little note for our practitioners, though, is that they didn't change the clause numbering, with one exception, to try to make things a little bit more manageable for our contracting personnel, our contract writing systems. And so they left the clause numbering. And so we now have DFARS 204 clauses that are in 240. We also have DFARS 225 clauses and 239 clauses. So just because a clause was eliminated from that part in 204, 225, or 239 doesn't mean that clause was eliminated entirely. The prescription for it may be in 240. I would highly recommend that all of our practitioners in the Army go to procurement.army.mil, our PAM site that is maintained by the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Procurement. And they have on that site a RFO resource page, and they list all of the RFO DFARS clauses that were changed, so you can know where to go to. So a handy reference that everyone, all of our Army practitioners, should be looking for.
All right, let's talk about my favorite one, FAR Part 15.
Yeah, so FAR Part 15 probably had some of the biggest changes we saw across the entire FAR. And it will be interesting to see how these changes are applied. So definitely some changes to our definitions of, for example, deficiency, a material requirement.
No longer discussions, negotiations.
Yeah, so that's kind of a huge change. And trying to understand the difference between discussions and clarifications, we have spent many, many, many hours as practitioners trying to understand, well, is this a clarification I can go at one-on-one, or is this a discussion? Where does it fall in? Discussions are now negotiations, which aligns more with commercial practice, and communications have been eliminated entirely. And so we are now, we have clarifications, and clarifications are discretionary. And the KO can engage in clarifications without triggering full negotiations. And so that's kind of an interesting change. You can now go one-on-one with a contractor and say, I need a clarification about this. It's not a negotiation. You're asking them for, you know, to clarify something. But again, there's always that point of how far is a clarification before you trigger negotiation. So I expect we'll see some cases on that, some protests of some sort.
And then was there anything about adverse past performance, or has that been taken out? Because I know that was one of the things that was used to be highlighted. We had to let them know or give them an ability to comment on it if they hadn't before.
So now that is discretionary. You don't have to mention it. However, you can request a clarification on it. So that's one of those discretionary things given to the contracting officer.
One of the other definitions or terms that has changed is competitive range.
Yeah, so that was a really only a couple words changing it, but they were really important nuance words, because previously it was the offerors that were most highly rated. Now it's been changed to the proposals the contracting officer determines are best suited for further negotiation.
Gives a little bit more wiggle room, I guess, to the KO, but also what does best suited mean?
Yeah, that gives a lot of discretion to the KO because you could actually have somebody offer, for whatever reason, the contracting officer says, hey, I think this proposal with some more work on it could actually be the best suited, even if it is perhaps lower rated than another proposal. And so there's a lot of discretion. However, with great discretion comes great documentation. And so we're going to channel
like
our we're going to channel our Spider-Man here. As with all things in this, and I know our contracting officers, a lot of them are really excited. They're getting more discretion given to them. But we live and die by the administrative record. And a contracting officer who's going to exercise their discretion needs to document that discretion or risk having their decisions reversed in a protest. Also, just as a simple practice point, that's great you thought that contracting officer today. In 6 months or a year, 2 years from now, you may be in a different job. The attorney who worked on this may be in a different job. And you may have some other contracting officer, some other attorneys trying to remember, figure out, what were we thinking? Why did we do this? Or if you're just like me and you tend to forget things you did 6 months ago, even that, writing it down. So just as a practice pointer, with this and all the other things we talk about with discretion, I would highly advise our contracting officers and our practitioners to write things down and to justify your discretion. That is defensible. If you didn't write it down, that's a lot harder. So it's great you determine who those folks who are best suited, but I can guarantee there's going to be at least some protests that come off of that, and it'd be best to have that analysis, that thought process written down so a court can say, yeah, that makes sense.
One other thing we've now noticed in FAR Part 15 is that we must negotiate with every responsible offer. The word responsible there is a little concerning just because normally we don't do a responsibility termination until right before award. But now this makes it kind of seem that we have to do a responsibility termination for everyone in the competitive range before we start negotiations.
Yeah, that's actually how I read it. It's a must. It's not discretionary. Must means must. It's an imperative word. And they must negotiate with each responsible offeror within the competitive range means, contracting officer, there is a very high likelihood of a pre-award protest if there is not that responsibility termination made. And responsibility termination should be made in writing. And so that is actually placing an additional burden on the contracting officer that we need to recognize and acknowledge. But once you do that, then you go forward. Again, you must negotiate with all of them on the first round. However, FAR Part 15 now says, okay, you may further negotiate, contracting officer, with individual offerors after that first round. You were not required in a second round to go out to everybody. You can negotiate for non-deficiency areas. If you're like, hey, this is either neutral or it's a strength, but what if you could do this extra thing? And then that might be able to bring it up to, you know, a significant strength, which would help you out have a better award. Again, though, we're going to need to be careful, make certain that we don't give someone an unfair competitive advantage, because if there's somebody, if there's an offer in the competitive range with a deficiency that wasn't negotiated about, then there is a concern there. Again, please, contracting officers, please document your decisions. If you're going to engage in single offer negotiations, please document that and just make sure it's well justified and run it by your attorney. Remember, CYA, call your attorney.
I'll put it with the great responsibility, you know. Or with, the great, great.
With great discretion, comes great documentation.
I'm going to have that in a sign and just like put it in my office. That's fantastic. Let's move on to small business. So I know there's been a few small changes, but significant changes when it comes to small businesses.
And some changes industry wished happened that didn't happen. There were a lot of folks in industry who were both happy and some not so happy that the rule of two survived, even though it's non-statutory for most small businesses. It survived nonetheless. A huge change is the end of the once an 8A, always an 8A.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That is, yes, that's a big thing.
Now the KO has the discretion on recompeting. And so the KO can say, I'm not going to set this aside for 8As. And so that's just something that everyone should be aware of once an 8A, always an 8A is now gone.
Because that was always a big topic of discussion when they were like, we're going to do an 8A. And it's, well, you know, realize you're stuck with 8A now for the rest of the life of this contract. So that is that's a huge factor when making that decision now.
Yeah. And so something that, though I would need to flag in this in FAR Part 19, is that there's a protest limitation there, and it's in some other parts of the FAR as well, of where it says that something, a particular decision by the contracting officer is discretionary and is not a basis for protest. And I am extremely skeptical that the GAO or COFC would agree with that statement because their jurisdiction comes from statute, and the executive branch cannot strip jurisdiction away from the other branches of government by pronouncement in the FAR. Mm-hmm. And so that's something we'd want to watch very closely and wait and see what a decision would be in that space and whether or not they will actually rule on that or whether or not they would accept this stripping of jurisdiction. There's a number of provisions in the practitioner albums, for example, that say, the companion guide, this is discretionary and it's not a basis for protest. Industry has already started opining. There's been various pieces I've seen out there where they've already started flagging some of these things and saying they don't think they are discretionary and that they intend to protest it. So this is something that we're going to want to watch very closely and see how the GAO and COFC actually interpret those clauses and what they do about it.
No, that is an interesting phrase that they have stuck in there in certain areas, for sure. The other one, too, that I've noticed about small business is that the rule of two, though, is still required, but only over the simplified acquisition threshold.
Yeah.
So it's no longer required for under that.
Correct.
That can change some things, too, especially streamline some of those other areas.
So that is something that could definitely streamline simplified acquisitions. And so it provides some opportunities for some more flexibility there.
Yes, exactly. So we've talked a lot about the FAR and some of the changes we've been seeing. Any other updates with the 26 NDAA that you want to mention?
Yeah, the FY26 NDAA, Senator Wicker had a lot of changes that he was pushing that and that we saw in there. For example, the threshold for certified cost and pricing data for the Department of War has gone from $2.5 million to $10 million. The trigger for modified CAS coverage for Department of War contracts has gone from $2.5 million to $35 million. And full coverage for cost accounting standards has gone from $50 million to $100 million. And that has a lot of impact on our mid-tier programs. And so we're going to see a significant reduction, I suspect, in the amount of certified cost and pricing data that's required for mid-tier. Which, of course, that gets into a more practical aspect of it, of we should be wary whenever we are having a sole source mid-tier program like that. Without certified cost and pricing data, we have a significantly reduced ability to ensure the accuracy of the data, ensure the government's getting a truly fair and reasonable price. And so that's something a contracting officer and acquisition practitioner should be very careful to make sure that they are still ensuring that we are getting the best deals possible for the government.
And I'm guessing that's because they want to encourage more people to do business with the government. And I know CAS is one of those sticking points. It's a lot more paperwork. It's a lot of information they have to provide and hand over.
Well, not just information they have to provide. So with CAS, virtually all businesses out there follow GAAP, generally accepted accounting practices. GAAP and CAS don't align. Now, there is a movement on the CAS board to begin to remedy that to a certain extent, but
that'd be good.
Essentially, CAS requires a contractor to keep a whole new set of books and a completely set of different books, and that is actually a real cost on the contractor.
Huge cost.
There's definitely value in limiting CAS application and potentially reduce costs to the government, but there's also consequences. It is not a risk-free decision because CAS covers some things that the GAAP simply doesn't cover. And so there's a balancing act we have to strike here.
I just mentioned that we're trying to get more non-traditional defense contractors with maybe changing the thresholds. Anything else about them specifically?
Yeah. So there were some really big changes in the FY26 about them, specifically in terms of what they no longer have to follow. And for example, FAR Part 31, cost principles, is now no longer applicable to non-traditional defense contractors. Certified cost and pricing data, the DFARS business systems, and some other things are simply no longer applicable. And that's going to create an interesting bias towards those non-traditional defense contractors, because the traditional defense contractors, and reminder for our listeners, of an NDC is a contractor that has not in the past year performed a contract that is subject to full CAS coverage, which that threshold going up to $100 million, that's well over 90% of our contractors are qualified to be NDCs. Now, with them not having to follow, for example, FAR Part 31, I have to wonder, how is a cost type contract going to work? Because that is the origin of how we determine not just the allowability of costs, but also for contracts not subject to the CAS, that determines that those are the rules in FAR Part 31 for reasonableness and for allocation of costs. And so that's a whole lot of stuff that we're like, we really need to make sure we have a way of doing it. Now, what's interesting is FAR Part 31 is largely statutory in nature. And so those rules actually still apply, but just not precisely in the form of FAR Part 31. So folks like DCAA are actually having to work out what this new set of rules are and what's still statutory and what's applicable and what's not. So I look forward to hearing what the auditors are going to be thinking about this.
Now, it'll be interesting to follow that area, especially with CAS and, the new thresholds, and then also the need to encourage more companies to work with the federal government, too. I know there's definitely a balancing act going on here.
Yeah, but it's going to be, we're in a brave new world with all this, and I look forward to seeing how those changes are implemented. And with all of our listeners, again, my bottom line encouragement for all this is simply, make sure you document discretionary decisions. That's how we're going to defend it. That's how we're going to tell future contracting officers, contracting specialists, attorneys, this is why we did what we did, so that way we can help them be successful and we continue to defend our protest.
That was fantastic. Thank you so much for talking about the updates with us, the phases as we enter phase two, notice and comment, and some of the issues we are seeing in some of the new language, or not just new issues, but things that we should be aware of that could change our practice big time. So thank you again for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, or the Department of Corps.